So we crashed again, but hopefully that
crashy,
will be
crashy.
Fine. Well, when your files are a little too long, it doesn't really work out for you. So we went to Josenki Onsen Resort, which it turned out was not just the name of our hotel, but also the name of the town it was in. There are many hot springs towns sprinkled throughout Japan. This one was called Josenki, and there were like 40, not 40, but a lot of different hotels and public baths and things like that. And all the hotels had onsens in them. Now, this was going to be me and Noah's hot springs adventure. I didn't do enough research. The baths were segregated by gender, just like you've seen in anime. Something which
Except
Noah...
There was no bamboo wall in the middle.
Right. It was like two
so
separate areas.
I would have to hang out with all the naked old men.
Yeah.
And
I didn't, like, I have a problem with nudity. I don't like being naked around people.
Aaron
or being
would,
naked around Japanese people in Hokkaido whom I would never see again really didn't bother me. Also, there was enough steam that you really couldn't see anyone, really. So it didn't really bother me, and I was really excited to try their outdoor and indoor baths. Noah refused to go into the hot spring.
Well,
in fact, before we left, I was describing to my relatives, who were very dubious about why would anyone want to go to Japan, I described onsen resorts, and they were like, oh, if you're just looking for hot springs, they have those in, like, Colorado.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? Well, there are none where I'm from. I didn't think the U.S. had many geothermic sites at all.
There are tons of them. I have myself been to several.
I had not,
One ever. Of which was in Colorado, yes.
I didn't know they existed at all.
Well,
who knew?
Live and learn.
Yeah.
But it was not only that I would have had to hang out with the naked old Japanese men while you got to hang out with all the hot, hot Asian ladies.
They're mostly people's moms.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. It's that it was, as I have frequently said, I was expecting it was going to be like a small...
A romantic couples
intimate
resort.
Intimate romantic couples resort. Instead, it was a Catskills resort, complete with... Kids running around and old men making bad jokes.
Grandparents
and,
playing bingo.
Yeah, grandparents playing bingo.
Later, a group of office workers did show up for their company outing, but Noah missed it because he didn't leave the room for a while. But at a traditional ryokan, what you get is you get a tatami mat room, and around dinner time or whatever, they let you into your room, and then a maid comes and brings you a meal in your room. Then after dinner, you kind of leave, and you can go and take a bath or whatever, and while you're gone, the maid comes again, and she lays out your bed in the same room where you just ate dinner.
Yeah.
And each one has their own kind of... Like, you get a big sample of small dishes, and the price of the meal comes with your room. Our maid was really nice. She tried really hard. She didn't really speak English. She tried to translate a lot of words on her cell phone, which was amusing, because it's like, is the meal to your, eto, ano, and she's looking at her cell phone, looking, finally, satisfaction.
Yeah.
And we're like, whoa, complicated.
I'd never seen the little phone translation doohickeys.
Neither have I. A couple of people at the resort, I don't know, but...
Yeah, and they seemed really super useful.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive.
And they worked pretty well.
Yeah.
The maid, she was very nice and left us a little note later.
Yeah, that was like, nice to see you.
Yes.
Or something.
We'll
Thank
put
you.
The photo up.
Yeah.
But it probably took her 2.5 hours to write.
I know. Anyway, it was a nice room with a view of I went for a resort with a reasonable price. Now, let me tell you later, I looked up online romantic onsen getaways for couples.
Yeah.
There are some in Hakone, the famous onsen town that we went to later in the trip. For $900 a night, you can get your own private bath in the room. Only $900.
Only $900.
About the cost of the plane ticket there.
We could just go to the one in Colorado.
Indeed. Or Allison and Scott went to one where they had co-ed bathing. We just didn't go to it.
You get to wear your bathing suit and don't have to hang out with all the naked old men. Unless there were monkeys.
No, they were still
but
naked.
There were no monkeys.
No, you still have to be naked.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
At the one Scott and Allison went to?
Yep.
That's not what you said before.
They hung out naked. I don't think you understood what I was saying then.
Duh.
So, we were kind of rushed to get through dinner and bathing and bought beer from the vending machines and hung out in the room. And the next day, left Sapporo and headed back south.
Right. I want to complain.
Okay.
Because the meal was...
The meal was only okay. First of all, we were super full from Genghis Khan still. But second, it was kind of like meh.
It was... Well, I think we got there late.
Yeah.
And so, we probably got like the last dregs.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I was so full. And then I was like, I've got to eat this because... If I don't, it's going to be like I'm some kind of American jerk
who doesn't want to eat the shrimp just because there's a face on it.
Right. Raw fish. I love raw fish. I like sushi a lot. I eat it a lot.
Not when you're filled with lamb.
Not when I'd just eaten this giant meal that was also very good. Look, the point is, Even if I'd really wanted to go into the pool with all of the naked Asian men, I really couldn't do anything but lie on my back and sort of stretch out because I ate so very, very much.
Right.
The end.
All right. Moving on. So after that, we left the next day and made it back to Tokyo in one day, although it was a bit of a stretch to take several hours of trains out of Sapporo and out of Hokkaido.
Yeah, but that went okay. That went well.
It went all right.
Bullet train's really fast.
So then we were in Tokyo for another few days before heading off on our adventure to the southern part of Japan. So we went to Harajuku because I'd read many things and fruits magazines and all that stuff and about the street fashion in Harajuku. Went to Harajuku on a Sunday because I knew that was when we were supposed to see the most people in freaky street fashions and gothic Lolitas and stuff. But it was really creepy and horrible because, first of all, the train, super extra double crowded. The station, the most crowded train station I've ever been in. You can only move forward in tiny baby steps. I think there was an event in the park that was next to the station.
Which certainly didn't help.
And yeah, and I think that made it super double crowded, more crowded than Times Square.
Mm.
It was giant pain in our asses, and later that day we had a reservation at the Ghibli Museum. So we kind of had to rush and, you know, take some pictures of some freaks. It was awkward because the other people who were taking pictures of freaks were all
So there were
guys.
Harajuku girls there.
Right.
And so Harajuku girls
There's like
are
a decora chick and a cosplayish person.
Crazy high school students who dress up like freaks in their pajamas.
Or like Lolita. Or, yeah. Lolita costumes.
And
the costumes.
Then disgusting Westerners take pictures of them.
Yeah, that was like the most other gaijin we'd seen in one
really
place.
Really incredibly sketchy Japanese guys with long painted fingernails
who look
and
almost
like
homeless.
Permanent sneer.
Yeah, they
have
were
a really expensive camera.
Really freaky. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a bad scene.
I didn't really feel great about being a part of that whole
We didn't really
thing.
Go to the giant Hello Kitty department store or anything because then we just had to leave.
Right.
So we left Harajuku and we went to the Ghibli Museum, and the Ghibli Museum was freaking awesome. Unfortunately, it made Noah feel like weirdly sad. I don't know why. The whole place had like the right attitude, I think.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It felt, except for the whatchamacallit, Nick Park section.
There was like a
Wallace and Gromit
seasonal exhibit or like a traveling exhibit that was for that one studio.
I could have easily done without, but so you're not allowed to take pictures inside
right. The
Ghibli Museum. So we just kind of have to describe to you what it was like.
You can also buy a book or DVD which have many photos of the inside. Or you can read the New Yorker article from
right.
a few years ago about when it opened.
Yeah, but look, it's made for
four-year-olds. Right. So there's one big gallery in the bottom part of the front, which is essentially displaying to little kids how animation works. And it's pretty impressive, but you have to really duck down to look into most of the things because they're eye level for a Japanese four-year-old.
Yeah.
And it's still very beautiful, but fortunately, because it's intended for little kids, you don't need to read any of the displays. They have pamphlets and stuff in English, but not the most amount of English labels or anything like that.
Mm.
It was not really necessary since it's a kids' museum.
But there are lots of places that only little kids, and we're talking little kids.
Yeah, they're like
maze age.
Tiny 2
you
foot
know?
Tall doors under the stairs.
Yeah,
stuff.
They can run around, and there's lots of places that were cramped for adults, but were
meant for
normal
kids.
Size for kids.
Yeah.
And just a lot of really cool stuff. There was a recreation of Miyazaki's study.
Yeah,
that
it
was,
looks like the best work area ever.
Yeah.
Like, it looked like the world's most wonderful office with all these books of, like, photos of landscapes and famous paintings and
Sketches everywhere
from all the different movies and storyboard panels.
Props and come to life. Nausicaa, there was Nausicaa's
Gun. Yeah, so as a model to draw or whatever. Tons of stuff like that. There's a stuffed cat bus that only kids can really climb on and stuff.
Yeah, they
it's
wouldn't let me
big.
In.
I don't think it was quite to scale. I think
but,
in the movie it was bigger.
No, it would be bigger.
Yeah, but if you're a kid, that would be the right
scale. Still pretty big.
Scale. So tons of kids bouncing around on that. There's a really spectacular gift shop. And then on the roof, there's the robot from Castle in the Sky.
Yeah.
Laputa.
But he was sad.
Yeah, he
I didn't
kind of
really
sad.
Expect that.
That's how he
and
looks in the movie.
People didn't really appreciate the fact that you're not supposed to take your picture
in front of it.
In front of it.
It looks like the robot's looking at you.
The robot is looking down.
The right way to take your picture in front of it would be to face the robot. So
yeah.
You're looking at it.
So
and
you're
it's
looking up.
You.
And look, it's looking down at you. And it just seemed.
Yeah, nobody really seemed to get it.
So tired. And it's not.
If you remember the movie, it's like hundreds of years old.
Yeah, well, I understand. It's just that if you stand next to Totoro, and you there is a place where you can stand next to Totoro, who's sort of the ticket taker behind the window, and you can get your picture taken with him. And that's something that you can smile and hold up the
peace sign
and have your picture taken like that. But this robot, it was kind of like, I don't know, getting your picture taken in front of some kind of atrocity footage, you know?
I didn't feel that way.
Well, most people clearly didn't, but I did really strongly. And I just felt like the whole place just, it was built on top of, you know, sadness, I guess.
Well, it was designed by Miyazaki's son. And by, you know, it seemed like he missed his father or something. I don't know. If you ever go there, you should definitely make time to eat at the Straw Hat Cafe.
Yes.
Because they have amazing, huge slices of delicious cake that's fluffy so you don't get too full. Wonderful drinks with names like apple tea from... with apples from the 100-year-old apple tree.
Yeah.
Or, like, other very colorful descriptive names. You don't want to miss that.
And their waitresses were also in costume, but it was not creepy at all.
Yeah, it looked like a regular... It looked like it fit with the cafe.
But it's like every frickin' museum or whatever. They always have gift shop and restaurant. And it's there because, like, you gotta. You gotta have that. But here... it's a natural part of the museum, and it's really, it would be a real shame if you didn't go. So, if you do go, make sure that you stop by.
Yeah, they have an English menu.
You can get the giant chocolate cake, and I can only imagine what that slice of chocolate cake looks like if you're four.
I know.
It's like the size of your head.
Yeah.
And so good.
The chestnut pudding, a little bit disappointing. I wouldn't really go with that. I just didn't want to get the exact same kind of cake as Noah.
Yeah.
They also have actual food, like omelet rice. It looks like a very Western-style cafe. Like, everything is very
Western, but sort of Miyazaki European in that way he does.
Yeah, like where it's Miyazaki European. So they have the strawberry cake that Japanese people like, and omelet rice, which you would not find in Europe. And
no, certainly not.
It's like the bathrooms, extremely Western style, but with the same little Japanese tropes, like there's still a washlet. And it's like, well, you almost had me fooled that it was Western style bathroom, but the washlet is a dead giveaway.
Oh, yeah, we haven't mentioned about the...
I kind of did at the beginning.
Oh, what?
The washlet is an attachment for your toilet bowl seat that has several buttons. A bidet button,
right.
A seat warming button, a flush sound button. I'd heard about the flushing sound that apparently Japanese women, in order to cover up the sound of their peeing or any other rude noises in the bathroom, they were flushing the toilet like while they were going. But this was wasting a lot of water. So I just read this one article that was mentioned how... so you can get these flushing chimes, so it's like a button on the wall and you press it and it makes a flushing sound for you, so you don't have to flush the toilet while you go. I didn't really expect there would be in almost every bathroom. And most
indeed
of the time,
it was.
And most of the time, automatic. Like, you didn't really have a choice. As soon as you close the stall door, a recorded sound of flushing plays, which is clearly recorded. And it's like, it's obviously fake.
Yeah. But no, I was talking about how there are no paper towels in Japanese restrooms. You are expected to carry a little...
No hand dryers either.
Right.
Some. If there's a hand dryer, it's the world's strongest hand dryer.
But that means it's really, really upper class sort of places. So you're supposed to have these little washcloths. And we didn't know that. We had no idea. And it wasn't until
we were watching... Yeah, we kept noticing people coming out of the bathroom. They were all using their own little handkerchief or washcloth to wipe their hands off on.
And by God, watch the first episode of Cowboy Bebop. Because Spike goes into the bathroom, washes his hands, and he takes out a little washcloth from his pocket, dries them, and puts it away.
I don't really think anything about it.
And it made no impression on me, and I've seen that episode I don't know how many times. But it's true. That's exactly right. So I didn't have a washcloth until we went to the Ghibli Museum, and I bought one.
Yeah, then we bought them. Little Hello Kitty ones were available
super
everywhere.
Super awesome.
They were pretty good. But the Ghibli ones we got are
I'm
super good.
Really pleased with my choice of washcloth.
Yeah. I know. You picked the good one.
I know.
I had to pick a different one.
It has a little Totoro on it.
I know.
Hey, he's tiny.
I know.
So what? After that, we went to Sunshine City, didn't we?
Yes. Then we went to Ikebukuro.
Yes.
Because I'd heard that in that area, there are like these department stores that cater mostly to trendsetting women. And so it consequently is an area where you can supposedly find a lot of like boys love shops and yaoi stuff. But I didn't really research it extensively enough, so I didn't really know where to look. So we just kind of walked around for a while. And then the guidebook recommended the Sunshine 60. What the deuce? So the guidebook sort of half-heartedly recommended the Sunshine 60 building, one of the top 15 tallest buildings in Asia, apparently. But it's in Ikebukuro or whatever. So we went to eat dinner in that area, and eventually I was like, why don't we go to the restaurant or at least the bar that's towards the top? Because the observation center is supposed to be kind of a ripoff.
Yeah.
But if we go to this bar or whatever, we can get a drink and nonsense. So it turned out, first of all, the express elevator into this very tall building
was ridiculous.
Like, you get in and it's like a white normal elevator.
Sort of
white
opaque,
inside.
Opaque plastic or something.
And as it heads to floor 60.
The doors close and all of a sudden,
like, music plays, the lights turn on, and they're like
strobing
like
dolphins flying through space with rainbows.
Sides. It was really weird.
There were no wizards or unicorns.
Almost.
They were sorely missed.
Right. And so,
so you go on the Express 70s elevator.
Yeah.
To the
the funky bar. So the
new age whatever.
So yeah. The bar turned out, it's called like the Night Sky Bar, and it turned out to be much fancier than I expected, where there are these little booths where you kind of get a private booth that sits you out facing the window of the, you know, the skyline. But it was like the Tokyo skyline at night. It was really incredible. It was much more impressive. A lot of guidebooks did say, if you go to Tokyo Tower, go there at night, the view is more impressive. And I didn't really, you know, think about it much. Yeah, it's totally true. So the Night Sky Bar, the Tokyo skyline at night, 1,000 times more impressive than Tokyo skyline during the day.
It we just took seemed, pictures.
We did, but
they didn't come out very well. But we took them.
It just seems like it goes on forever. Like, when you go up in a tall building in New York, you can see to the end of Manhattan. You can be like, all right, well, here's where the top tall buildings kind of stop, and then the more suburbish borough begins, even if the borough is very crowded. In Tokyo, there's no end to it. It just keeps going. It's
off
5 times the size of New York.
Until it vanishes in the horizon.
Yeah.
And your view is not blocked by other tall buildings.
Yeah.
It just...
just keeps going.
Just goes.
The name's Mike Dent. E. Vanguard's second lieutenant, Mike Dent. That much I do know. The rest is anyone's guess.
Huh?
Because due to a fluke, one moment I'm in the year 5000, the next, I'm in the early 2000s. So the question now is, can I prevent history from running its course? Or things doomed to repeat themselves.
Or we could do a podcast, you know, with anime and tokusatsu and video games, Asian cinema. Maybe some indie music thrown in for good measure.
You know, you might actually have something there. RFI Central, podcasting at its finest. And way ahead of its time. RFIcentral.blogspot.com. We're also on MySpace and iTunes. Check it out.
So one of my other goals for going to Japan, besides like visiting an onsen and that kind of thing, was to go to a bartender-esque, like the bartender anime, fancy pants bar. There's one in New York that's a Japanese-style bar called Angel's Share that has Japanese bartenders, but they're going for some kind of like 80s hot couture bar, like a European bar where you can get gin-based drinks, you know, vodka-based drinks, and a bartender in a vest, like,
yeah,
serves them to you, and he has a bow tie or whatever. So it's supposed to be this kind of European traditionalism that doesn't even exist in the U.S. anymore. Maybe it never did, but you can get, you know, your slow gin fizz or
right,
whatever there. And so this was that kind of bar. So I was conveniently able to check two things off the list at once.
That's true. And I expected it was going to be incredibly expensive because it was super classy.
It was pretty expensive.
Angel's Share was much more expensive.
We spent,
and even Angel's Share wasn't that expensive.
Like, I know, but Angel's Share,
surprise.
Angel's Share last night we spent like, what, 30, 60 bucks?
Something like that.
Night Sky Bar was like $90.
Mm-hmm.
We did get another set of drinks and a set of snacks, but there was also a $10 cover charge.
I forgot about the cover charge. All right. Well, still though.
Anyway.
That kind of place in New York.
Way more expensive.
Like $1,000 a table. This place, it was classy, but
a little chintzy. There was kind of a Russian hooker next to it.
She wasn't a hooker. She was clearly a mail order bride.
She was massaging that man's crotch.
Oh, that's not true.
He was a high roller. You could tell.
Ah.
Anyway, it was supposed to be super classy, but perhaps the clientele was not that classy since they let us in and we were just wearing jeans.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so were other kind of touristy people, but not strictly a tourist bar by any stretch of the imagination.
No, which is why we were able to get a seat and why it was so super awesome.
Not open very late.
Yeah.
It was closed at 11. So the next thing we did the next day, we went on another hot springs adventure. Hakone is a town in the mountains an hour or so south of Tokyo.
Hooray!
And it was on the line where Mickey lived, so it was easy to take the train to Hakone. And I'd read, again, on the internet, I saw a picture of an onsen that had essentially a giant teapot pouring green tea into a green tea bath. And I'm like, that's awesome, I have to go there. And it turned out it was in Hakone. It's the Yunsen Onsen Resort. You're allowed to wear bathing suits there, and they have all kinds of crazy different baths.
Yeah, required to wear
You're
bathing
required.
Suits.
Well, there are two halves of the resort. We
right, right. That's true.
There's the traditional half and then the other half, and we went to the non-traditional half with the bathing suits. And you can bathe in all kinds of different ridiculous liquids. The champagne bath, the wine bath,
the sake bath,
the coffee bath, the charcoal bath, the Dead Sea bath.
The Aegean Sea bath.
It was pretty awesome. It was a bit difficult to find because I looked on the websites and stuff for a map ahead of time, and I found a singular map which I knew was not detailed enough to show the area at all because it was like a circle around a mountain. And
yeah.
Yunsen here, bus stop here, train station here. And so I tried to look on Google Maps to find it. But if you want to use Google Maps for Japan, like you kind of have to type in the address in Japanese, which I couldn't really do. But if you do, if you look at like Shinjuku on Google Maps, mm-hmm. it'll show you where the 7-Elevens and AMPMs and McDonald's are. It's
very useful.
Cool. Yeah. I found nothing. I found Hakone as a dot with no satellite view. And I'm like, oh. So we get off the train in the middle of nowhere, like
yep.
a switchback train that went up the mountain.
And it is kind of mountainous. And we got off the train and we also didn't pay on our way out because
didn't really know
the guys weren't paying any attention because you pay both times when
yeah.
you get on and when you get off. So it was kind of weird and we didn't
like
know
we would normally ask them where to go, but since we didn't pay, we didn't really
yeah.
ask.
So we kind of just walked.
I sort of picked a direction. I'm like, well, there are only two ways to go, up the mountain or down the mountain.
It reminded me of Twin Peaks a little bit. Yeah. So we just started walking up the hill.
Yeah.
And it was a little cold.
Yeah.
Not so bad.
But eventually we hit an area with a few hotels and then found Yunsen pretty easily.
Yeah.
Not thanks to their map, which did not include crossroads,
sucks.
Other roads, other highways connecting to the highway we were walking alongside it. Yunsen was awesome. Also in Hakone, if you ever go there, another ninja consultant travel tip. If you read the section of the Rough Guide to Japan, the British guide that I bought, if you go to Hakone, there's right in the main part of the station, there's a little lake with a pirate ship. We can go on cruises on the pirate ship. There's also a rope, like a tramway. And if you ride the tram on a clear day, you can see Mount Fuji. So you could do this potentially even on just a trip to Tokyo, because Hakone is a day trip from Tokyo. So if you left early enough in the day, you could take the pirate ship, go on the tramway, see Mount Fuji, and make it to Yunsen by the afternoon and hit all the crazy baths and then go back to Tokyo the same day.
Yeah, and something about ice caves.
Oh, no, then you'd have to go all the way to Mount Fuji. This way you can see Mount Fuji without having to go there, because it really is kind of far away.
I said that the ice cave was in Mount Fuji, and you said no, it's in another mountain.
No, it's near Mount Fuji.
All right, whatever. Ice caves are awesome.
It's in the Fuji Mountain.
It's where they would go and get ice for the emperor.
Right, but according to the Josh in Japan podcast, it's totally not safe at all. Not a place to take the elderly or little kids.
It's made of ice!
There's like a single railing sometimes. Because Japanese style, no one cares about. That's the other weird thing about the Yunsen, a lot of the outdoor baths were built onto this mountainside, and it was cold out, it was January, but since all the baths are heated, as long as you kind of get out and run to the next bath, it's totally okay. But because they're on a mountain, they put these stairs along the mountain, and the stairs are made of like this rubber grippy material,
yeah.
and they're continually pumping like warm water out over these stairs. So wet steps, this, for an American mindset, that's like, that would never happen in America.
Yeah.
Because it seems like a slip and fall accident waiting to happen, but...
Speaking of which...
That's for the theoretical show.
Well, I guess it's for the theoretical show, but I do want to mention that Mickey's parents, they were very nice, but they were super concerned that we were going to sue them.
Yeah, like, we were riding in Mickey's car, and Mickey's mom called, and she was like, are you driving them around? Don't drive them around. If you get in an accident, they'll sue us.
They will sue you! And they were afraid
they were worried
that
if their cat bit us, we would sue. That's the kind of reputation Americans have abroad.
That's not great.
Even
I was not very
country,
happy
frankly.
About that.
So, Yunsen.
Yunsen.
Only the sake was real sake. The red
wine,
the red wine was not real wine.
Disappointing.
The coffee, real coffee. At the end of the day, really old coffee.
Yeah, so it's the coffee. It's not that fresh brewed cup that you get to bathe in. It's what's left in the bottom of your garbage disposal at the end of the day that smells.
That's kind of not good. It was too crowded earlier in the day and later in the day. There's one water slide there, not in the coffee bath. There's a water slide, but it's not very big by American standards.
Yeah.
I could handle it.
Which is
pretty,
okay.
Pretty weak. Fine with me. The other girls at the resort wore the least revealing bathing suits I've ever seen. Like, I have an extremely modest bathing suit that I got from, like, a sports center that's intended for, like, high school swim meets or something. And this, it's a one piece. It's very plain. Extremely revealing by Japanese standards at this resort, where they had little shorts and, like, a little tank top.
Yep.
I was so embarrassed. But yep. Other Westerners there, like mostly Russians, they had more revealing bathing suits also.
And Aaron was hypersensitive to all of the different cultural
the local
oddities.
Customs.
Yes, the local customs. Real and imagined both.
Yeah.
And so she was like, okay, now we've been in one bath, we should probably wash off in this thing over here until we go and then go into the other bath. And Aaron ended up,
more
because
than once.
Everyone's...
They give you these little robes.
Right, and towels.
But they're all identical.
So Aaron ended up using someone else's towel.
More than once.
More than once.
It was really embarrassing. I can remember where I left my towel.
Biggest faux pas.
I know, right?
Possible.
So that was kind of Yunsen. We went back. The next day we went to...
But it was really great.
Yeah, it was good.
I just want to say one more thing, which was it was extremely gratifying at the coffee bath because we were kind of dubious as to whether or not it was real coffee.
Yeah.
But I saw the guy change the biggest coffee filter I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was totally for real. Oh, that was also the place where the cafe there had a panudo sandwich.
The panudo sandwich.
They had an English menu, but one of the things listed was panudo sandwich. And we're like, what is that? Get the panudo sandwich. So Noah ordered it.
Yeah, it's prosciutto.
Prosciutto.
It's prosciutto.
Just badly spelled.
Yeah.
Prosciutto.
Panudo.
But the girl also asked us, she's like, can you help me with this English translation?
Oh, yeah.
What should I call these muffin things? Like, it was like bread that came with the meal. And we were like, I don't know, like cookie or biscuit? But like biscuit
means
cookies.
Well, no, it wasn't a cookie.
It was like
I said biscuit.
Right, but they were thinking
of course,
like British biscuits.
Right, British biscuits are
cookies. So they didn't want to call it a biscuit. So we decided like muffin.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. Then Aaron spilled...
Oh, so everywhere you go, it's a tourist place, they sell these crepes. There are crepe stands everywhere. And wrapped in, you can get a crepe, and it's like wrapped up like an ice cream cone, and inside sometimes is ice cream or some kind of cake thing, or a savory crepe with like curry or something inside of it.
Mm.
So finally, after seeing so many crepe stands everywhere we went, I was like, I'll get a crepe. So I got a crepe, but I couldn't see, like no one else was really eating them, so I couldn't tell how to unwrap there was like paper around it, so you don't have to touch the crepe directly. But it was unclear how to unwrap it. So I got towards the bottom of the crepe, and I took the paper completely off, at which point the chocolate syrup in the bottom sloshed out onto my crotch, staining both the robe and my swimsuit,
yep.
And the sticky chocolate crotch. That's great. So
in the communal baths.
Good times.
Oh, yeah. Also, the Aegean was ridiculous, where it was supposed to be like Homer's Odyssey, I think.
Yeah.
Where you were sort of adrift in the Aegean Sea.
Yeah, with
one of the few baths where you could actually swim a little bit. Like, it was okay, because it was big. But then, every half hour, this thing would happen where all the lights would go out, and they would play sounds of rolling thunder.
Like there was a storm
like
coming.
Like there was a storm, and
there was like a little stage area where there was like a little light show. I think Matt's coming over here. I'll just pause.
Better not do it.
Hi, I'm Edward Anime.
I'm Lewis Anime.
You know, when we invented Japanese animation in 1949, we never expected this fan community.
No one could have imagined Big Eyes would be so popular.
And you're listening to the Ninja Consultant podcast.
Hey, hentai.
All right, we're back. So the Aegean thing,
They
had this little like light show and like a storm, and the little kids would all gather up
and
by the stage
squirt
area.
And they'd squirt cold water from the ceiling. Like it was rain.
Yeah, that was cute.
I don't know. And then the sun came out and there was a rainbow and the bubbles came, like the Lawrence Welk show, the bubbles came from the ceiling.
Yeah.
That was kind of lame.
It was adorable.
Actually, it was pretty good.
It's pretty cute.
It was pretty good. The kids loved it.
Because whatever. So, Hakone. The next day we're back in Tokyo, where we actually went to Nakano Broadway and Mandarake. Now, Nakano Broadway, I went to because it was described in Patrick Macias' book, which I highly recommend, called Cruising the Anime City, An Otaku Guide to Neo-Tokyo, the worst title in the history of Tokyo.
You hear that, Macias? We're coming for you. Jackass, you weren't even in Japan.
Yeah, we did write to Patrick Macias to be like, will you hang out with us? We're friends of Daryl Surratt. And Macias was like, sadly, I'll not be in Tokyo during that time.
Yeah.
Who knows if he was lying.
Friends of Daryl's. Whatever.
All right, so Nakano Broadway is the crazy otaku mall with several different specialized branches of Mandarake inside, a couple maid cafe or two, weird stuff like a plastic gun model shop because in Japan you can't own a gun, but you can own a highly realistic plastic model of one. Yeah, or you can. They have those giant doll things that are like realistically sized, but you know it's an anime character.
Yeah.
So if you want to buy your life size doll, Chi, you can.
Don't.
From Chobits.
Do not. Do
we're
that.
Also extremely humorous Gundam merchandise, like a very corporate-looking polo shirt with a Xenon label or whatever.
Yeah.
Or a coffee mug that looks like a horrible corporate coffee mug, but it's got, like, the Gundam Company lanyard for your name badge, again, yeah. with the corporate logo. Adorable stuff like that. Like a coin shop, yo-yo shop, where I saw other yo-yo enthusiasts like myself. Yeah, that's about it. We tried to hit the 7th floor Kinokuni in Shinjuku, but we got there too late. Instead, I got the 2005 Rough Guide to Japan, which was good because it was up to date.
And we checked, and that sushi restaurant was not...
No longer on the menu.
Was not on there. Yeah.
So, the next day, we left on the bullet train to go to Kyoto. 2 or 3 hours south of Tokyo. The bullet train in Kyoto, not as nice as the bullet train that went north.
True.
And immediately upon our arrival in Kyoto, we checked into the J-Hoppers Backpackers Inn, which was like a youth hostel, except for no curfew.
No curfew and...
filled with Australian hippies.
I got the
but
sense...
But still, it was a really good time.
I can't say enough nice things about this J-Hoppers place. Apparently there's another one.
There's another hostel. There's one called K's House.
K's House is apparently even nicer.
Yeah.
Than J-Hoppers?
But they have, like, long-term prices and stuff. If you're a couple going there, I do recommend trying to book ahead to get the Japanese-style room.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they stick you in bunk beds. And if you're... It's fine if you are thin or something, but if you were American size, two of you would not fit in the same bed.
Well, we fit.
Bunk
okay.
beds are kind of creepy. Yeah.
And I was concerned because I thought maybe there was going to be some rule against sleeping in the same bed or whatever, but there wasn't.
No, at least in mine. Even in the room with a... Like, there are private rooms, so you can get a room with just, you know, one set of bunk beds, or you can sleep in the larger room with multiple bunk beds. But you can kind of change per night, too. Anyway, it was like $25-$35
yeah.
a bed.
Internet access, they had Skype.
Free internet access, free wireless, a little computer in their lobby, all these guidebooks that you can borrow at any time, bilingual staff to help you out. They hand you maps of all kinds, including a map of the area. Good times.
Yeah.
And so we spent that evening in Kyoto walking through the old-style covered shopping arcades where there are, like, old traditional stores. And at one point, there was a really good moment where these monks walked by chanting during their evening thing, and it looked like they'd been doing the same thing for hundreds and hundreds of years. It's a really good moment.
It's bizarre because the way this arcade is situated, you'll have shrines that are hundreds of years old, temples. Right next to a shoe store, you know, right next to
like
an Okonomiyaki place.
There's like an arcade on one side and then shrine on the other side. And it's like, ugh. Then we also went to the Gion area, which was like the photogenic
old-style geisha town.
The geisha area of town, where we saw some geisha. They might have been geisha. The guidebook said there's this popular thing that you can do now where you can pay $60 or whatever, and they'll dress you up in geisha makeup, and you can walk around, much to the upset of actual geisha who spend years and years training to be one.
Yeah.
But it's very picturesque, scenic little tiny, tiny streets with all these very expensive-looking restaurants going off to either side. At that point, the guidebook failed us because we ate at a conveyor belt sushi place that was not very good. And it was filled with other Westerners, probably also lived there by the guidebook. It was bad.
Yep.
Whereas the conveyor belt sushi we went to the next night, as recommended by J-Hoppers, super good.
Much better. Much better.
I ate way too much, way too fast.
Yeah, Aaron.
It was kind of embarrassing. I was like, I don't know if I can walk home. I feel sick.
Aaron ate too much.
Right.
That happened. So we walked around there.
It was an Irish pub.
Yep. We hung out with a bunch of, we didn't hang out with expats, but there were expats there.
Yeah.
Guys who were Australian and working in the financial traders.
Yeah.
And so they had to work at weird hours because different markets were open at different times.
At that point, I was getting sick.
Oh, yeah.
Because I had a sore throat for, like, days before it became a real cold.
Yeah, you undoubtedly caught what
I
had.
It sucked.
And there was a cake in the fireplace.
For
no
reason.
We couldn't figure out why.
Yeah, like a weird wedding cake. The next day we went out to Inari Shrine, as recommended by a friend of mine. Inari is the name of like those boxes, like the magic box things. And also their favorite food is Inari, this kind of, it's like a sweet bean curd wrapped around rice.
Looks like a fox ear.
Yeah, it's like a triangle.
Allegedly.
Inari Shrine has all these orange gates, very reminiscent of the... orange gates that were in New York City a few years ago in Central Park, where clearly this guy went to an Inari shrine, and they were just kind of like ripped them off.
Yeah, or
like,
saw a picture of
it. We could do the same thing in Central Park, and then tourists could show up and complain about how goddamn ugly it is.
And they did.
And they did.
That's
and
exactly
all regular
happened.
New Yorkers all came together in the park in the middle of February to talk about how, why do they make it construction
orange? It is weird, because it's construction orange, and we were all like,
this is hideous.
Why would they choose this color?
Yeah.
And that's the color of the Inari shrine gates. So
when you go to Inari shrine, the gates there, though, it looks right. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But it's because they're not temporary construction. They're old school. We hiked around the entire mountain, not because we intended to, but because Noah didn't understand my hint that that was the end of the shrine.
Well, I didn't know that that was the case. I figured... So we're on the shrine path, and all of a sudden...
It goes up over the mountain.
We're on... Right, but you don't expect that you're not going to get a sign that says...
No, it doesn't say this is the end of the shrine.
P.S.
No, it doesn't
You're now going to wander off and die.
The gates just stop. And you can hike over the mountain and go into the town on the other side and take a bus back to the train.
Right, right.
I just didn't bring those maps with
me. Well, we weren't prepared, and nobody knew that that was going to happen, although we did get to
see a
really cool bamboo forest.
Right.
Which you kind of knew, but you didn't...
Well, I said, here's where the gate stopped. Do you want to keep going? To which you said yes. Not really realizing that meant we would have to hike up the mountain again to get back.
Oh, man. And it was steep
in certain places. Right. But
Aaron got a big blister on
it. Inari shrine was really cool. It was also really weird. Like, we got there kind of around... lunchtime. So there are these super old Japanese ladies all going up these stairs up the mountain to eat a picnic lunch at the little shrines at the top. The ones who were extra old would say konnichiwa, but the younger ones, no. I don't know why.
Yeah.
So the oldest generation, extreme polite. Younger people, no.
And there was...
But the...
There was
Japanese
a super old lady who was really struggling to make it up the stairs.
And Noah was like, Gambate.
Gambate.
And she was like, oh, I got it. It was really adorable. But Japanese old people, extremely spry. There were many groups of old people going on hikes and things all around the country. They're much fitter and in better shape than American old people who always seem to be with wheelchairs or canes and really struggling.
Yeah,
to get
that's
places.
Really true.
I think Japanese old people
are
in good shape.
You just didn't see that very much there.
No. And a lot of places were not handicap accessible, per se.
Yeah.
But it seemed like the old people were in better shape.
Yeah, probably because
you saw them out walking around all the time.
Go hiking up Inari Shrine every day.
Yeah.
Or running on Monkey Mountain.
Monkey Mountain!
Right. Hey, Dave and Joel. I wanted to say, Dave has a very sexy voice. But I also wanted to say, Joel has a sexy voice, too. But the two different kinds of sexy. Like, Dave is the guy who's like hanging out at the club, like, hey, how's it going, buddy? But, like, Joel is like a guy you want with you, like, when you're safaring in, like, Africa. I think you guys should start your own band, you know? You guys could be, like, two lead vocalists, and Joel could be playing, like, electric guitar, and then Daryl Sirott could jump in with the bass guitar, and Clarissa, and that chick Hello Kitty from Happy House Hentai. They'd be singing like the backups, like those hot double mint twins, and then Joe would be all up on the drums, and Laura Kay back there with the synthesizer, Casio keyboard thing. You guys would have the most rockin'est podcast anime band ever.
Dave and Joel's Fast Karate for the Gentlemen.
The podcast for people who don't like anime.
Or podcasts.
Find us online at daveandjoel.com.
Then you need the Happy House of Hentai podcast. It's dirtier than a middle-aged Japanese businessman.
HappyHouseOfHentai.lipson.com.
Just kidding, middle-aged Japanese businessman. We love you.
So search for anime in the iTunes Music Store.
Or visit our website at AnimeWorldOrder.com.
Anime World Order. Revealing the truth about anime, one podcast at a time.
Then... we went back to Kyoto proper, Inari Shrine's kind of outside of the city, to go to the stage at Kiyomizudara. Kiyomizudara, which has appeared in several anime, because typically when people take a class trip to Kyoto, this is one of the tourist sites which they absolutely must visit.
Mm.
Japan is a good country for tourism. There are a lot of Japanese tourists. And every single tourist attraction is preceded by a number of shops selling absolute junk. Really, just crap.
Yep.
Related to whatever it is. Like, a fried bean pastry with a picture of whatever it is on there. In a way that's so chintzy and so touristy that after you've been to more than one Japanese tourist attraction, you're like, oh my god. Like,
so
this really takes me out of the moment of being in, you know, Kyoto, and it's the old city, and it's the old capital.
Well, everyone in Japan seems to know that Kyoto is really overpriced. It's a tourist town.
It's a tourist
town. And it was.
There were ancient sites, but everything was preceded by layers of tourist crap.
Mm.
So we went up Kiyomizudara. We saw the stage. And it's like this, it's like four stories tall, but apparently there's a saying that's like, if you're brave enough to jump from the stage at Kiyomizudara. And Noah was like, why would you jump from there? That's fatality.
That's not brave. That's being an idiot.
Well,
and it's kind of like...
You land in the shrubs. But
I think that now that I've had some time to think about it, I think that that must be the Japanese equivalent of Niagara Falls. Mm. Of people going over the falls in a barrel.
Except for only about 10 people survived Niagara Falls in a barrel, whereas opposed to 80% of the people who jumped from the stage in the Edo period survived.
Well, survived initially, but they probably broke something.
Yeah.
I mean, that was
much more
quite
dangerous.
A ways. I was not expecting that. I was expecting the sort of thing where everyone would do it. Mm-hmm. Like, there'd be a long line of people jumping.
Yeah.
But... That would be
that was
like
outlawed
lemmings.
In the 20th century.
Well, that's probably a good idea. What idiot would do that?
I don't know.
A lot of those people died.
The next day we went to Osaka. Osaka.
Hooray!
Where we hung out with Apocalypse Dowell from the Apocalypse Dowell, formerly of the Apocalypse Dowell podcast. But now he no longer does Apocalypse Dowell, he does the Moon Masters podcast.
Which is not as good.
Oh, but before we talk about... So, on an episode of the Apocalypse Dowell show... He talked about taking a trip to what he called Monkey Mountain.
Monkey Mountain!
It's not actually called Monkey Mountain. It's just a national park in Mino, which is just outside of Osaka. And so I bothered Apocalypse Dowell through many emails and possibly a phone call or two about how to get to Mino. Because it's more like, it's not a foreigner tourist spot. It's like an internal Japanese tourist spot.
Yeah.
Eventually... We figured out how to get there, and we hiked, and it's a national protected area where there are a bunch of monkeys that live there. And it's famous for that, and you can tell because all the tourist crap on the way at the beginning of the path near the train station all has monkey,
yep.
It's monkey related. And so we asked the woman at the tourist information site there, we're like, we came here to see some monkeys, where can we see them? And she was like, my English isn't that good, but it was pretty good. And she's like, If you're lucky, you might see some monkeys in the waterfall area. So we proceeded up the path that led to the waterfall, which was a pretty impressive waterfall. And it was a nice forest path that went past an aesthetic monk table, an insect house museum,
it was a bug museum.
Insectatorium,
if you will. All right.
And up a nice mountainous path, and we did eventually
see a monkey. So we went around this bendy path, and it looked like there was a guy walking his dog, but it wasn't a dog. It was a giant monkey.
It was huge.
It was really big.
Like, it was bending over, as monkeys do, but it was, like, at least 3 or 4 feet tall.
And the guy...
I pictured little monkeys.
The guy that I thought was walking the dog, but really he was just walking next to a monkey, he didn't realize it was a monkey until suddenly he looked and he saw it was a monkey, and he didn't totally freak out. But he did walk about a foot farther away from it. So this monkey was hanging out because another old guy had been feeding him peanuts right in front of the sign that
said,
says, do not feed the monkeys. So the monkey was just hanging out. Now, when I thought, because she warned us, the woman was like, if you have a bag, the monkeys...
Oh, like a plastic bag?
Yeah, full of food. The monkeys will steal it from you.
Right.
And
so we made sure to, like,
I thought that there's
going to
be freaking monkeys all over the place, and, like, the monkeys fall from the sky and devour your food.
Maybe it's not monkey season, though.
Well, clearly it was not monkey season. But really, I was terrified that that monkey might attack me.
It was a big monkey. It was, like, orangutan-sized, kind of.
Oh, now we can put in the JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Oh, yeah.
What an enormous monkey.
What a gigantic monkey.
This appears to be an orangutan.
Right. But then someone did come walking a dog.
Yeah.
And the dog freaked out, and the monkey freaked out, and it jumped up into the mountain, into the forest, not to be seen again.
Yep.
I took one blurry photo,
kind of Bigfooty picture.
I was afraid that taking a picture might scare the monkey, or that the monkey might steal my camera or something.
Right, or attack you.
Or attack me.
Because, you know, I play D&D, and it's like, yeah, I could take a monkey.
No.
That monkey would tear my head off. In a not funny way at all.
So it was pretty good. But then after that is when we hung out with Apocalypse Dowell. And we went
waterfall. The waterfall
was really cool. Yeah.
And it was
we had a little warm dango that we're friends.
The picturesque waterfall that...
Oh, that monks meditate
that
under.
You might train under?
Yeah.
Except there was a guy?
Yeah, there was an actual monk who trained under the waterfall who was famous for it. And
maybe
that's where the whole thing comes from.
Maybe.
Because there was a temple that he was from that was also...
It looked really uncomfortable under there.
Yeah, it looked
very,
like it was cold.
Very cold.
Yeah. Training under a waterfall.
He was tough. We also went to the Bug Museum on our way back.
Which was mostly for kids. But there was a nice, like, butterfly greenhouse area where you were actually allowed to touch the butterflies. The sign said in English and other languages, touch the butterflies gently, do not grasp them.
Yeah.
Or
what was it?
Squish. It's a grasp.
It was grasp. It was grasp. And
I was really surprised.
We figured, wow, in America that would last 2 seconds and you'd have no more butterflies and a bunch of 2-year-olds with butterfly all over their mouths. Like, it was really nice.
Yeah.
And there was, I mean, it was just us in the entire museum.
Yeah.
And there was one exhibit where it was a giant scale model of a grasshopper.
A robot grasshopper.
Because it was like to demonstrate how their legs move when they jump.
Yeah, and how their wings help
but
them.
But there was narration, so.
Jumpu.
Yeah. Jumpu, jumpu. Every 10 minutes or so, it would go off.
Grasshopper-san. Yeah. So ridiculous.
Gambate, grasshopper-san. That's exactly right.
Pretty much.
So it was empty, and we were looking at a lot of bugs, and then every now and then we would hear, jumpu, jumpu.
Yeah, it was pretty ridiculous. We also went specifically because our friend who'd gone to Japan in August the year before had seen giant insects because he was staying in the countryside.
Oh, yeah.
And so he was like, Japan is awesome for its giant insects. And I'm like, we're going there in the winter. I don't really think we'll see anything. Plus, we're not really going to be in the countryside. And he was like, still look for the giant insects.
No, there were no, well, we saw them in the museum, but outside the museum, no giant insects, but ridiculously huge ravens.
Oh, God.
Like, huge. Like,
yeah.
I would give even odds.
Freaking scary. They were the size of vultures.
Three ravens versus that monkey. That's a good fight.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty good.
Like, I don't know who I would put my money on.
Yeah. The ravens were huge and extra loud. All right. Then we went to Okonomiyaki with Apocalypse Doll and his wife, Keiko, who I was glad I got to meet. It's always a little weird meeting people from the internet. So we're in the train station. I was just like, just looking for the biggest weirdo you see. Because that's typically the way it goes when I meet someone from the internet, except for Keith. I mean, Keith. No last name given.
Oh, Keith.
Keith.
Yeah.
No, actually, Apocalypse Doll, really normal looking.
Yeah.
Especially compared to Otaku Generation, whom I met at various cons.
Clearly.
Apocalypse Doll, totally normal, not very nerdy at all.
Nope. And he has, I think, on his podcast, you can hear this really thick Kentucky accent. Not so much in person.
No, it sounded normal. Keiko. Keiko's really cute.
Yeah, they were very nice.
They took us to a bar called Captain Kangaroo, but it was not like the show.
It had nothing to do with the kids' show, Captain Kangaroo.
It's just an Australian bar. It was weird to us, then like later we met our friend Tetsuya, and we were like, yeah, we went to a bar called Captain Kangaroo, and he's like, an Australian bar?
Like,
yeah.
So for me, and thanks for asking, let's see, what did I do this week, Mickey? I hung out with the Ninja Consultants.
How was that?
Yeah, it's good. So we met down in Umeda, in Osaka, and then went down to Shinsaibashi and met up with Keiko, and we all went out for Okonomiyaki and back up to Captain Kangaroo.
The female Ninja Consultant, I'm not sure if I can say her name, did she have the ninja like sign on her face? Like you see on her website?
No, I was looking for that, but that's not her, actually. That's a friend of theirs. So I was...
Oh, okay.
We were duped. I was looking for someone with dark hair with ninja written across her face. But I'm jealous, man, because they've hung out with Lord Kaos.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, like, they've hung out with everyone. They hung out with like Otaku Generation, and they hung out with Lord Kaos. They hung out with our best friends over at Geek Nights. They hung out with everyone, dude.
They are getting around. Maybe they're like podcasting whores almost.
You said it, not me. I'm not disagreeing, Mickey. I do not counter what you were saying.
The next day, we went to Takarazuka, which is right outside of Osaka, and we did two things there. Well, three things. First, we met my friend Tetsuya, who's actually, he was dating a friend of mine, and he was tutoring me in Japanese when I had no money to take real lessons, and he's a really nice guy, and he learned English in the U.S. for a while, but eventually he went back to Japan and got a job again. We went to the Osamu Tezuka Museum, which is in Takarazuka. And it's kind of a small museum. It's really cool. It'd be even cooler if you spoke or read Japanese, because you can look up any Tezuka animation in their library. They have every Tezuka manga possible, so there's this big manga library.
Many translations.
Translations.
Yeah.
Of
the Tezuka manga.
There was translated manga?
Yeah, tons.
Oh, I didn't see it.
It was up and down the walls.
Really?
How could you not?
Oh,
notice?
You mean like the covers were on the walls?
No,
in the library.
You could take the volume and read it in English or French or Spanish or Italian,
really?
Or German. Yes.
No, I didn't see any English manga.
I can't imagine what you were doing. I spent an hour in that room.
I was
reading manga the whole time.
Really? I was flipping through stuff in Japanese.
Well,
I did not see the translation.
Yeah.
Of Black Rose or whatever and weird stuff.
Adolf and Phoenix, and it was all there.
I'm a sucker.
I'll talk more about Tezuka, I guess, on the theory show.
Yeah. They have these,
I got some stuff
to like,
say.
Kimba the White Lion t-shirts. They're really good. I was like, I could wear a Kimba t-shirt at an anime con. I would be like the oldest school person there. It'd be awesome. But not $35 awesome.
Yeah, it was expensive. But there was there were cool exhibits about his life.
About the film that just came out.
There's a film of Dororo that's coming out.
It's like number one in Japanese box office now.
Oh,
it just
really?
Came out, yeah, like last month.
Not surprised.
But I think it stars chicks. In the original manga, it's like dudes who look like Kenshin and
Yeah, I don't think it stars chicks. I think yeah, his sidekick.
Yeah, but in the manga, I think
In the manga, I believe you're right. He's a boy, but you never tell.
You never know.
Speaking of which, Takara Tezuka.
Yeah, so Takara Tezuka is a small town at the end of the Takara Tezuka train line in Osaka. And in many manga and anime, I'm talking about Host Club here, and also high school girls, usually Takara Tezuka, code word for lesbians, because Takara Tezuka Theater, they perform Western-style musicals and dance review numbers and stuff. All chicks. Even men's parts played by chicks. Chicks who are specially trained to play male roles and sing the male leads.
Yep, to act like guys.
So there are many groupies of the male leads, even though they're totally heterosexual females, big fans of the male stars played by females, and they don't question their sexuality or anything based on that. Just no, they're a fan of Takara Tezuka. I thought that the audience there would be like all chicks, but no.
And this is really what we'd been led to believe.
Right, right. But it was a mixed crowd.
That we would be, like, I would be the only guy there, except for a couple of gay men.
Yeah.
Well, yes, also Tetsuya. But no, it was a regular theater-going audience.
Yeah.
Takara Tezuka's style is there's a two-act play, and then an intermission, and then a review. Typically, the subject is tragic. This one happened to be kind of a light farce. So it was a little different than what you would typically get. But Rose of Versailles apparently is something that they perform.
Yeah, based on the manga. I bought a DVD of it. There were different... The DVDs and VHS tapes they had on sale of the performances were different prices based on how famous the cast performing it was at certain times. So I may have only bought the $30 or $40 DVD, but there was certainly a $100 DVD.
It certainly was.
Of a more popular cast.
Well, I don't think the DVD we bought, I don't think we got the whole show.
It looked like famous scenes, but maybe... But they only did a one-act play.
The play, it seemed artificially shortened, and the review was not long at all.
The dance review part?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll talk a lot about this
in the theory
in the
show.
Next show.
Yeah, because, wow, we have a lot to say.
Yeah. I just want to mention that during the review, which was non-ironic, it was like a Ziegfeld Follies, Busby Berkeley sort of musical thing. So... People dancing on lighted steps with ridiculous costumes.
With the giant lighted, the words that were lit up said,
Fancy dance.
And totally
then later,
serious.
Later,
and the English lyrics to that song were, dancing is my life, fancy dance.
Fancy dance. Then later there
dance
was the champ dance.
Champ dance. Anyway.
It's a little gay.
Right.
Moving
on from there, we went out for Okonakoyami again.
Yeah. this time, super good.
Super delicious.
Tetsuya took us to this place where we got the, what was that?
Oh, yakisoba.
Style it was. It was yakisoba, but what, it was style specific.
Well, the style of Okonomiyaki, you get, is specific to the region, but also to the bar you get it from.
Right, right. Well, that, yeah.
So in Osaka, you can get the kind with, like, noodles in
so
it.
So was it Osaka style?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you get an individual pancake. But
speaking of Osaka style.
We're going to talk about that in the theory show.
Okay, I guess. Osaka style is everyone acts like a jerk.
Everyone
except
acts like
really
a
it's just like New York.
Yeah. But in, like, if we ate Hiroshima style okonomiyaki,
yeah,
it would be like one giant pancake and we would all split it.
So
moving
then,
on from there, we walked through various, we had to say goodbye to Tetsuya and we walked through various shopping arcades to get back to our hotel. By shopping arcade, I mean it's like a covered street with a lot of shops in it. This seemed extremely popular all over Japan. We did generally,
like a mini mall.
We did generally visit giant shopping areas. I mean, we visited big urban centers and the biggest cities in Japan. What was typical to these cities that was not typical to American cities was the high number of shopping arcades that are closed to cars that you walk through like this, and also underground malls. It seemed like under every street in a major urban area, there would be an underground mall that was pretty upscale, connecting different train stations. It was kind of weird.
And I can only imagine that those exist to protect pedestrians from crazy bicycles that fly by
particularly
at breakneck speed.
That are allowed to go on the sidewalk, unlike in New York.
They ride on the sidewalk and...
Wow.
I was really super... Because I felt like they were going to kill me at any moment.
Well, they're on a bike and they can move faster than you. So my theory was that they'll move before I can move.
I know, but it's still really unnerving
to
have someone whiz by out of your blind spot.
Yeah, it's usually better to walk in the underground
and not
mall.
To jump.
We also saw like there's a famous display of neon where it's got like the Glico Man running, and that was sort of near where we were staying, so we get to see that. And also, I guess it used to be back in the day, bands would play on the street in Harajuku on Sunday. They would shut them down for traffic, and then bands would play. This is in the early 90s. And then Tokyo stopped that. Too many rambunctious teenagers partying in the street. No good. Osaka, they're still allowed to do that. So we were walking through downtown Osaka in these shopping arcades on a Saturday night, and they had many bands playing. At first, it looked like two girls who had their own, like, two-girl band. And we're like, wow, check it out. Their band's performing in this kind of mall that's closed. And then, no, we realized further down the block, there's another guy. Further down, there's another band.
Yeah.
Everyone was kind of competing for the crowd of people out on dates. But it was pretty good. Like, if I lived near Osaka and I was a teenager, I would totally go there every weekend.
Yeah.
It was pretty awesome. And eat crepes and play video games.
Yep. I won something in a UFO catcher machine, so it is possible.
No one Chop-Chop Master
Chop-Chop
Onion.
Chop-Chop Master Onion.
From
Parappa the Rappa.
Parappa the Rappa video game.
Saltwater taffy isn't good anyway.
Yeah, it is.
Saltwater taffy is one of those holdover candies from the 1920s that it's like the Moxie soda. It's like, oh yeah, everybody loves Moxie. Nobody likes Moxie. Or Red Bean. If you go to Japan and someone offers you Red Bean anything, kick them in the nuts, because it is terrible.
Really?
It's awful.
What is it? In fact, I think I've had it, and it is bad.
Well, it's because Japanese people didn't have sugar until Europeans got there, so they had to use all these stand-ins for what they considered sweet. And apparently red beans, which are not sweet, were
I
the
like
sweetest
red
thing
beans
Japan
and rice.
Had.
That's good.
Well, yeah, but that's different.
Down-home
it's not supposed to be a candy. It's like, oh yeah, it's red beans and rice, just like candy. I'm from Japan. I love red beans and rice candy.
I don't think they eat red beans and rice.
They don't.
That's some soul food.
Dave and Joel's Fast Karate for the Gentlemen.
The podcast for people who don't like anime.
Or podcasts.
Find us online at daveandjoel.com.
We'll be in part 47 of our adventure. Actually, we're almost done. It's only been a jillion hours.
Yeah.
So we left Osaka, although it was... Everyone always, like, all the guidebooks and stuff said how ugly Osaka is. They're like, Osaka's an ugly city. Maybe it used to be uglier.
Maybe.
Tetsuya was like... Wow, this train station is really cleaned up. It used to be, like, dark and disgusting. And as we walked around looking for the best okonomiyaki place, it had closed and we went to another one instead. But Tetsuya was just like, all these restaurants totally changed because he lived there, like, 2 or 3 years ago. And it was all totally different now. We also saw our only host club guys were in the underground mall train station area. And I was like, wow, those guys look like rock stars or models or something. And they were like, oh, that's probably host club dudes.
And it was.
Totally was. They were very... Oh, metrosexual. That's what I'm looking for. There's a lot of metrosexual people in Osaka, but Osaka, all the food looked really good, except for sushi, where Osaka is known for its food. And Apocalypse Owl was like, I think Osakans really only care about food.
Yeah.
And that seemed apparent from...
That's what Tetsuya said, too.
...the high number of food places, but I could live with that.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Well, it was really good.
All of that eating good food.
It's really good.
What's next?
Fukuoka.
Oh, the name of that shopping arcade was the Shinsaibashi Tsuji Arcade. Okay.
Oh, wait.
So
no,
on the way out,
Fukuoka.
No, on the way out of Osaka, I really wanted to go to two places, the Abenoshi Shopping Arcade and Expo Park. They were in different directions.
Isn't it Abenobashi?
Abenobashi. They were in opposite directions, and
yes.
We were running out of time because in order to meet Paul from Hawaii's wife in Fukuoka, she didn't have a phone or internet access, so we'd agreed a week ahead of time we would meet in a specific place at a specific time, and we would just be there, and that was the only way to hang out with her. So we had to definitely make it to Fukuoka with a deadline, and I really wanted to go to see the Tower of the Sun statue in Expo Park because it's kind of an otaku landmark where for Expo 70, it was like a World's Fair 1970 that was held in the suburbs of Osaka, and it was very much at a time when Japan was still developing, and it was an era of huge economic growth, and that's when their technology was really taking off, so it was this sort of eye to the future thing, and a lot of otaku moments and culture come back to that moment at Expo 70. So, and the Tower of the Sun is really a huge statue that was in the middle of the exposition center when the center was built. But since then, the pavilions have been demolished, and it's this park. A park with the greatest warning sign ever at the gateway with, like, this hilarious cartoon demonstrating what the different Japanese rules of the park are. One of them is, like, don't let your dog bite some lady's ass.
Yeah.
Don't let adorable, cute fire hug you. Things like this. The Tower of the Sun is huge and impressive. It's more impressive to know that it was once in a gigantic building. Housing it? But we had to go way out of our way to get there. It took a long time. It was not actually in Osaka proper at all. Didn't help that I looked at the map of trains, and I was like, well, these two trains look close together, so I think we can transfer. No. It was not a transfer point at all. We ended up walking several blocks. It was difficult to find how to get to the monorail, and the monorail was expensive. It took a lot of time. It was really annoying. It was also very cold to be hanging out in a large park. This was regrettable, but I got a bunch of really good pictures of the...
Yeah, and it was impressive. It looks like some kind of idol to a god that's no longer worshipped.
The kind of art theory behind it is that it was going for, like, pre-anything. Like, you didn't want to... I can't think of the right words.
What? Pre-Judeo-Christian?
Yeah, you don't want to be influenced by...
Proto-Indo-European?
Yeah, you don't want to be influenced by the Christians. You don't want to go through recent Japanese history. So they had to go for something before that. Something like prehistoric or anything. And that was the art style.
I don't think it looks prehistoric at all. I think it looks ultra-modern.
Yeah.
It looks very much like Ultraman, in fact.
Modern art.
Well, yes, it's modern art, but I guess we'll save it for the theory show.
Right.
But it's immense. It's really huge.
It's huge. I got a picture of myself standing next to it that I'll post for scale. But then we had to haul ass, get back on the train, and head to Fukuoka. And we totally made it on time. There were only a certain number of bullet trains that we could take to get to Fukuoka and still meet Julia on time. But by God, we made it. And Fukuoka, I didn't really have much of a reason for visiting there, except for that's where my grandfather, except for two reasons. First, that's where my grandfather went during World War II. So I wanted to get some pictures of modern day Fukuoka, which I knew was one of Japan's largest cities, according to the guidebook, and very modern, with the ridiculous modern mall called Canal City, built over this waterway with this fountain that shoots, biggest mall fountain, I don't know, not biggest, but...
So it
shoots
ridiculous
most ridiculous mountain fountain, where it shoots water like four stories in the air in a kind of water show set to classical
music.
That is
so cheesy.
With lights. It was pretty cheesy. It was like the future of the 80s.
Yeah.
So we met Julia and hung out with her for a while, and she was indeed another uber nerd like us. We talked about Paul, and she was like, so why are you guys
why'd you come to Fukuoka?
We were way too embarrassed to be like, only to meet you.
We came here to meet you.
That was the main reason.
I couldn't help but feel like
why
am I meeting you guys again?
So we hung out for a couple hours. We ate the most delicious ramen on the entire trip.
It was
Fukuoka is one of the places where ramen originated, I guess.
The
it
best.
Was awesome. At just a random place. We saw the fifth Apple store I'd seen in all of Japan.
Yep.
And only later did I find out the reason you'd want to go inside to check your email. Whoops.
Yep.
Missed out on that again and again.
Yeah.
Oh, well, a lot of the hotels we went to did have wireless internet or an internet that I could hook up to. Anyway, so then we hung out with Julia, and then we said goodbye to her, and then we kind of walked around, and we kind of walked around some more.
I just want to point out,
stores.
Julia is a vampire LARPer.
Nerd.
Nerd!
We're nerds, and we think that's nerdy.
Yeah, it's pretty nerdy.
Yeah.
But then I knew she was all right.
But we had to hang out with Julia because, man, Paul is like one of our biggest fans, and he lives in Hawaii.
I know.
So that's like, if we want to go to Hawaii.
If fan, indeed, you could call him.
If you can call him a fan?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
He's like our number one fan. He started a podcast just to react to our podcast.
I know, just to react to our podcast.
Yeah.
He's
like Noah's soulmate.
Yeah, he is. It's very odd that, with the exception of Escaflowne, about which he is completely incorrect, with the exception of that, I think that our tastes are almost exactly the same.
All right. But the guidebooks had mentioned over and over again, Mr. Donut. Good place to eat, good coffee, the best coffee in Japan. But I didn't go into one because, you know, I'm kind of a dieting person. But Julia was like...
kind of a dieting person.
Yeah, but Julia was like, oh, yeah, the Mr. Donut donuts, super good. And there was a Mr. Donut place right in the train station near our hotel. So we were like, let's give it a try. So we ate a ton of donuts.
Yep.
They were all really good.
They were really good.
And the coffee was the best coffee in all of Japan.
Finally.
As per the guide.
Yeah.
And you could take as many creamers and sugars as you wanted, unlike the rest of the coffee in Japan, where they give you one tiny creamer and one itty-bitty sugar packet. Like, that's going to be enough.
Or not even a sugar packet.
Weird
liquid sugar. Weird,
like,
sugar.
Gel yeah. sugar. Tell you what, New York style, you get a coffee from a deli, it's bad coffee, but by God, they give you a handful of creamers and a handful of sugar packets because
that's right.
You never know.
And you need it.
You might need it. It might suck.
It's bad coffee.
So, and that's when we randomly found the prepaid cell phone and also randomly ran into a giant book off where I found things I'd been looking for. Things for other people. And the next day, we took bullet trains all day back to Tokyo.
Back to Tokyo.
To finish up the last few bits of our tour, which were actually some of the coolest parts. God damn it, I thought we were almost done recording. I'm losing my voice. We had to get back to Tokyo by a certain day because finally I heard back from someone at Studio Gonzo.
Yes.
I know Anime World Order doesn't like Studio Gonzo, and they have this theory that any Studio Gonzo series, the first few episodes are really good, and the rest of the series kind of sucks till it goes downhill to an unsatisfying conclusion. I wouldn't know, because I've never really watched any Studio Gonzo shows all the way through. Not even Kaleido Star. I've only seen the first few episodes.
Oh, working on Welcome to the NHK.
That's true.
We're almost done with that.
Yeah. And I've only seen the first few episodes of their Seven Samurai anime, Beck. I've only seen the first two episodes.
Tankatsuo.
Genkutsuo, the Count of Monte Cristo one, only seen a couple episodes.
Yeah.
I still haven't watched Pumpkin Scissors.
Right.
They also most recently did Afro Samurai, which is only 6 or 8 episodes, but the show that I worked on, Kids Next Door, which now everyone knows,
right. Now it's over.
The guy, the director, was friends with someone who ended up working for Studio Gonzo's branch in L.A. Because they're kind of reaching out on this international program thing.
Mm.
So I asked, if I went there, could I get a tour of Studio Gonzo? And he was like, yeah, I'll ask. So they were like, sure, a tour is fine. Just say so-and-so send you. So I emailed the tour person, and they were like, oh, we're all off on New Year's break, but when you get back to Tokyo, let us know. And then I didn't hear from her for a long time, and I thought maybe it was off, but then eventually I heard from the person. She's like, oh, nothing's in production, and we're getting ready to move to a new office, so it's going to be really boring. But you can come anyway.
If you want, you can come.
So I asked Inoue if he wanted to go also, because we'd be back in town. He's like, yes. Because he hadn't been on a tour of an anime studio either. And when we got there, it was sort of embarrassing when the tour guide was like, so what other anime studios are you touring on your trip? And we were like, that was an option. Like, if we weren't going to leave 2 days from then, I would be like, well, hook us up.
We didn't know anyone at other studios.
It's possible. But she may have also misunderstood how important or not that we were. But I think towards the end of the tour, it was
clear. I think you figured it out.
Pretty quickly that we were just fans, really.
Yeah.
And not
and you happened to
investors.
Work in animation.
Yeah.
I don't think she mistook us for investors.
Yeah.
But
we watched the
professionals, maybe.
We watched part of the first episode of Red Garden, which is the one that takes place on Roosevelt Island.
Yeah.
You kind of asked about it. But it wasn't translated at all, so it's kind of boring.
But also, Chi from
Anime
from the Lazy Man.
Or Anime from the Lazy Man. We saw him the next day.
I thought we saw him that night.
No, he was supposed to see us that day. I called him when we were in Fukuoka. I'd forgotten to email him the whole trip, even though Noah was like, did you email Chi? Did you email Chi? Did you email Chi? Did you email
Chi? Right, because I really wanted to meet him.
Yeah, and I kept forgetting. Finally, I emailed him, and he was like, why didn't you call me earlier? I didn't get your email. And then he was going to go on the tour of Studio Gonzo with
us.
But he had some presentation to give, so he didn't go. So we saw him the next night.
No, I think we saw him that night.
Oh yeah, that's right, because Inoue dropped us off. Okay.
Yeah.
It was a long day.
Yes, it was.
Wow. So it was difficult to find Studio Gonzo, because it's difficult to find anything in Shinjuku. Shinjuku is a big place, but we found it, and just
we
in
did.
Time. And Inoue showed up a couple minutes later. After the tour, then Inoue was like, yeah, you can come and hang out at Tokyo U, and we'll hang out in the anime club room.
And I was like, whoa!
We're like, awesome. So we went with anyway and hung out for like 4 hours.
Yeah.
In their anime club room.
Unfortunately, so I really did. Honestly, I thought the Tokyo U students were going to be at least relatively fluent in English. Because I couldn't imagine could go to Tokyo U without proficiency in English.
I thought there was an English section on their exam. And I'm sure that there is.
Yeah.
A few people in the club could speak kind of conversational English. Like, they weren't great. They weren't, you know, linguistic students or anything. But they were like, how are you? What anime do you like?
Yeah. And they were... I don't know. I feel as though, culturally, if the reverse were true, and we got an exchange otaku, if you will,
yeah.
I feel as though we as Americans would, like, in one of our clubs, we would immediately start palling around with them and, like, really try to include them in everything. And these guys just seemed really intimidated.
No.
And, you know, they wanted to be very polite and make a really good impression because they are, after all, Japanese.
Right. Well,
but that's not what I wanted at all.
If you think about it, too, we're also older than they are by quite a bit.
Oh, but we don't look that much
older. College students are like 20. You're almost 30.
Oh, but they didn't know
you
that.
You look old.
No, but that's not true.
They
don't look
that old. They can't grow
old.
Beards and you have...
They can't grow beards because they're Japanese.
I know. Anyway, so we hung out with them, and it was kind of awkward because they were like, so what anime is popular in the U.S.? So we're like, oh, you know, Cowboy Bebop, blah, blah, we didn't much stuff. And they were like, oh, Cowboy Bebop. And they quickly dug out a tape that was like this weird, like, 8-millimeter tape.
So, back up a little bit.
Okay.
Anyway, it takes us to this place, to Tokyo University. And we go to one of the student centers. And it did look,
the building looked like
Genshiken.
In Genshiken. It's kind of a hideous cement floor building. Nothing fancy.
And opened the door to
hear music students playing in the music building area, and the sports clubs had all their hockey sticks outside of another
And so the area. The anime club had half a room, and it was just as disgusting as I had hoped.
Yeah, it was pretty gross. Bits of food on the floor.
But what I was not prepared for was that they had practically no contemporary technology.
Yeah.
They were still running off VCRs. They had, instead of DVDs, they had 8-millimeter...
Super 8 tapes. But, yeah.
Well, they're the small, like, old video...
Like a home video camera tape.
Aren't they?
I don't even... Yeah, they're called that.
8 millimeter.
But I think of 8 tracks. Yeah, they're like Super 8.
Super 8, sure.
And, like, they had a computer, but it wasn't connected to the internet.
It wasn't connected to the internet.
It was mostly for playing video games.
And they had, by
God... They're like an old, like a Super Nintendo.
Just like whenever we go to club meeting or something out here, and there are always two assholes who just want to play Mario Kart through the whole thing.
Oh, these guys played Mario
Kart. Yeah, there were two guys just like that.
Yeah.
And they had it in the Famicom, it's called over there, of course.
They played the original Mario Kart.
The original Mario Kart.
It was very nostalgic for me.
And it was really cool, but I thought that it was all going to be space age and crazy, where they download everything from the internet we do.
No,
like we've been doing for years.
I think American anime fans trend to be more on the leading edge of technology because it's the best way to get anime. Like, anime at the beginning of the DVD market, finally you could choose subbed or dub. You could buy one form of both. So it was really like a push for anime fans specifically really wanted these DVDs. And it's much better than 8th generation VHS tape. When it comes to downloading video, anime fans are on the edge of that because finally you don't have to wait for a shipment or something expensive. You can download, you know, or digisub it yourself. But in Japan, if you're old school, you're like, let's watch
it. But
there's no reason to be on the edge of technology.
There is, because
you want to be into older types.
Image quality.
Yeah.
Where what was it that we ended up watching off live television there?
Code Geass? No.
No.
I don't know. It's a show that Clarissa likes.
I don't remember.
We watched it live, but we watched it like on these bunny ears on the TV.
And it was totally like, I haven't watched something on antenna where you get bad snow in the picture for, you know, nigh on 10 years now.
But actually, Mickey didn't have cable either. She just had a nice antenna.
Right.
Because nobody has cable there.
Because nobody seems to have cable.
Because who needs it?
No, you got all these perfectly nice shows about celebrities eating food.
Yeah. Anyway.
So we watched...
They showed us the first episode of Cowboy Bebop, and it was embarrassing to be like, I don't want to say to them, we really don't have to watch this.
Yeah,
I've seen it a lot of times, and I've seen it in English.
Yeah.
I've even seen it with subs. I don't really want to watch it raw now.
Pick up that thing about Spike with the washcloth.
Yeah.
And I never noticed before.
We watched a Gundam movie about...
Char's Revenge.
Adrian's Revenge. No, Char's Counterattack was really good. I'd never seen it. I'd like to watch it with a translation. It became kind of trying after a while to be like, oh, I don't understand what they're saying.
Yeah.
Or like, oh, look, the verb for piloting Gundams is Orimas. Just like riding a bus. Who knew?
Who knew?
It doesn't mean I understand anything else about that sentence, except for Gundam and Orimas.
I don't know. We saw an episode of Kuroppi.
For some reason. I reacted too well.
Don't know why.
Like, hey, check it out. It's Kuroppi. And then we had to watch
it. Yeah, then we had to watch it.
At first I was like, does anyone want us to leave? And that's why I started Kuroppi.
Like, they were just hanging out finally. And I should talk a little bit about these guys, the members. We got there, and it was amazing. It was... the Freak Squad.
Oh, yeah. The guy with weird teeth.
You got the guy with weird teeth.
The little spazzy kid.
You got the guy who's a spaz.
Yeah.
And you got the great big fat kid who's not actually that fat because he's Japanese.
Right. He's like average size by American standards.
You could fit two of him in one Big Scary Dave.
Three.
And Big Scary Dave has lost a lot of weight. Yeah. Or so I hear. As time wore on, some people who were more normal, I guess, showed up.
Yeah.
But you got the sense that the guys who were there when we first got there...
they were the rejects.
They were... always there.
Yeah, because some people showed up, saw that those were the only guys there, and then left
and
again.
And turned around and left.
They came back when there was more people. We asked them at one point, we're like, are there any girls in your club? Because we hadn't seen any yet. And they were like, yeah, like two or three.
Yeah.
Finally, one girl showed up.
One girl showed up.
And she talked to us. And that
was a little bit.
Cool. But it was definitely, so when we told them, you know, in an American anime club, it's half girls. They were shocked. They were like, wow.
Well, but that wasn't always the case.
But lately, yes.
So lately, yes.
Maybe Manga Club has more
so
girls.
Finally, we watched a bunch of stuff, and Inoue was like, okay, it's time to go. And so we thought that he was like going to take us now
to the main cafe or something.
So we followed him, and we followed him all to the train station.
He took us all the way back to Shibuya.
And he said, after this, I have to be somewhere. And Aaron was, thank God, because I was too polite or too whatever to say, okay, you mean now we are leaving. We are saying goodbye to each other and we are going in different directions.
And finally I was like, in Japanese, I'm like, ima, like,
ima.
Now. And
yeah.
He was like, oh, yes, now. And so we're like, oh, crap. Oh, goodbye. Nice to meet you.
Bye. Yeah.
At which point, we went out for weird pizza. In the picture, it looked more fabulous, but it turned out it was just ham with an egg.
Yeah.
A raw egg.
Yeah, it wasn't anything special.
And then we get the super seafood pizza with clams on it, because no one's allergic to sardines.
Yeah.
Anyway, then we met up with Chi from... is his new show called Tokyo Godfather?
Yes. His old show
his
is
old show
Anime
is
for the Lazy Man.
Anime for the Lazy Man. He got in a fight with his old boss.
Yeah, so here's the thing.
The podcast.
Chi, when... I don't know if anyone listening would have seen the show, obviously. Chi, if you were listening...
I think he emailed other podcasters, so other podcasters would
okay. Yeah. I always kind of wondered about Chi because he'd always have his hat pulled down over his eyes.
Yeah.
As though he really didn't want to be identified. And he started talking about putting together some kind of business plan for getting anime imported faster to the U.S. and talked about negotiating with companies. And then one day, the site vanished.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I really want to know more about this guy.
Yeah, but we're like,
he seems kind of sketchy, don't you think? I mean, he had all this stuff going on and then he just disappears and... no. Turns out, Chi, really nice guy. His boss was the sketchy one.
Yeah.
Who was...
not knowing how to run a business.
Yeah.
I've heard a really quick way to lose friends is to start a business for them. This proved true in his case. He told us the tragic tale.
Money comes in the door, friendship goes out the window.
Yeah.
He took us to...
like a bar.
Kind of a hole-in-the-wall, very cool...
I think it's kind of typical.
Yeah.
It's just we hadn't really been to one. But
the
way we got to this restaurant was, sometimes there are like these waiters, it looks like, standing on the street with menus being like, you want to go to this bar? Like, come to my bar, come to my bar, come to my bar. Or sometimes karaoke people. Come to this karaoke place, here's a coupon. Because coupons are really big in Japan. You can pick up a magazine at any train station that's the Domo magazine, and Domo has all these little coupons and ads for different things, and you bring in the coupon, you get 30% off, whatever.
Yeah.
And Mickey was going through it and explaining it to me, and she's like, here, look, we should try this place, and you get 30% off. It seemed like like since the days of the economic recession, deals and bargains have gotten much bigger there.
In New York,
anyone who's giving you something on the street, it's really shady, and you really don't want whatever it is they're selling.
And they're like, free comedy!
But at least twice in Japan, we had this happen where he's like, I can't find the bar I was thinking of, so we'll just go up to this guy. And this guy went up to someone on the street who was like, you get 20% off at whatever. And we're like, where is it? And he's like, I'll walk you there.
Yeah.
So the guy walks there, and it's kind of... It kind of waits on you for a minute, too. And I'm like, that's really weird. That is weird. Like, is this a country where, like, waiters, like, stand in the street, and then finally they get, like, a customer, and then they have to, like, wait on them, and then they go back out to the street? That's not really the case. They only waited on you at, like, the beginning of the meal to get you seated and stuff.
Right.
And then they go back outside.
Oh, yeah. Apparently, typically bars do this thing where it's all you can drink for 2 hours.
Yeah. The 120-minute all-you-can-drink special. Now, this seems really counterintuitive. It's not really the way I'd want to spend my evening.
No.
Where if I was going to go out drinking in New York, I'd want to get drunk slowly.
Yeah.
And then come down slowly. I would not want to get drunk. I would make a chart. I don't want to get drunk super fast and then feel sick.
Right.
Like, that's not really what I'm going for.
Which is apparently Japanese style.
It is what Japanese people are going for, because they got to catch that last train home.
They got to catch the last train, and then you got to go back to work in the morning.
Right.
So,
I mean, I argued with a couple people. Like, Mickey was like... But still, how much are you really going to drink in 2 hours? Maybe three drinks or something? So it would cost the same if you get the 120-minute drink special than if you don't. And I'm like, yeah, but if I'm getting a special, I'm going to try and drink as much as possible in order to get my money's worth, right?
Which is a terrible idea.
It's a terrible idea. I don't really want to do that.
Especially because
a lot of them come with all you can eat during that time as well.
All you can drink, that's not going to be your top shelf,
your top shelf liquor.
Gin.
It probably has a rule on it, like no top shelf.
I'm sure.
Like in the Antarctica bar where you drink free on your birthday, but no top shelf.
Yeah, no top shelf.
So we opted not to go for the 120-minute all-you-can-drink special, but the waiter kept arguing with Chi for like almost the entire, every time he saw us, he was like, no, you really want the special.
You really
like,
want the special.
We're like, no, we really don't. And he's like, well, then you have to look at a different menu. And, like, gives us a different menu.
We talked to Chi a lot about his experience actually working in the animation industry. And he was a really pleasant, really nice guy. And we kind of made half-hearted plans for the next night.
I think he forgot.
Well, he was going to call us. But I was afraid that maybe he thought that we were going to call him or something. And then it occurred to me that there was no way for us to get email to him because... The address only gets checked once every 3 weeks.
Oh, that was a website address, but then I got his real address.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, well, the next night was like pretty much our last night.
Yeah, was our last night.
We promised that we would hang out with Mickey.
And
so we went with her to a bar near her apartment that we'd meant to go to previously called the Aquarium Bar. Which had fish swimming
in
the
table. But don't skip ahead here. Oh. We're coming down the wire, folks. We're almost done with this.
Oh, because after we saw Chi, we went to
Love Hotel Hill in Shibuya.
And it was pretty awesome.
Let me tell you, you gotta stay at one of these things.
Right. Because Love Hotels have the hourly rate and then the stay the night rate. The hourly rate is the rest rate.
Yeah.
Anyway, we found the cheesiest one we could. We were hoping for, like, a sci-fi theme.
I really wanted the outer space Love Hotel.
Right, because sometimes the rooms have themes or whatever. So we found, like, the Love Hotel with the most neon, and it turned out that one of the rooms left, we got an aquarium-themed room.
Yeah.
So there's like a black light that you couldn't turn off that reflected on like these fake water reflections. Okay, first of all, when you're supposed to check into a Love Hotel, I thought it was like, it's anonymous. You're paying a machine or you're paying someone who's behind a counter and you can't see their face. So it's like not embarrassing to check in.
Right.
You could totally see the old lady taking your money here. Like
yep,
there was no
old lady
pretense,
behind the counter.
Whatever.
And Westerners up to that point had totally ignored us, and we ignored them. In Korea, we always sort of acknowledge people as they walk by.
Right.
Because you'd see...
There was one guy in Osaka who tried to talk to us between hitting on the other chick. He was like, oh, it must be the foreigner section. I was like, yeah.
No, he wasn't trying to talk to us.
I could have talked to him at that point.
Yeah,
that was
but
kind
not
of
really.
Anyway.
But walking into the Love Hotel, we were followed by another Westerner.
Yeah.
Who his date for the evening, possibly, was Japanese.
Yeah.
And I didn't see him approach, but when we got in, he was suddenly right behind me, and when I turned around, there he was. And he looked at me, and he was like, hey, like, yeah, you're about to get some too, huh? Wow. Sketchy.
Super sketchy.
Super sketchy.
Anyway, so we ended up with one of the more expensive rooms, because if you don't check in early enough, there are only a few rooms left.
But
so
it
was
very
about
expensive,
yeah, it was about the same price as a regular hotel.
Yeah.
But with all the bonuses you don't get in a regular hotel, like awesome blacklight, ridiculous karaoke machine.
You can sing karaoke in your room.
Instead of a mini bar, it was more like a vending refrigerator where you put in coins and you could get whiskey in a can or various other things at a more than regular price, but less than mini bar price.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome to have a karaoke machine in the room and many amusing things like samples of various beauty products. Also a headband. I don't know why.
Gotta keep vibrating, your hair out of your eyes.
A vibrating bed that didn't seem to work.
Oh, but the vibrating bed we couldn't figure out.
It turned out this is a panel at the top of the bed where you can control all the lights in the room and also the TV and also body sonic, whatever that meant. It turned out later a friend of ours was like, oh, the body sonic, you have to have the radio on and then the bed vibrates the music. I'm like, oh, of course.
Because I'd push the buttons, but nothing would happen because the stupid radio wasn't on. Oh, damn it.
There's also a free porn channel, but no, it's not really that. So there was a pretty big bathtub, too. It was all right. Anyway, someone else on my friends list was like, oh, love hotels, so that seems like that'd be really skeevy. But it wasn't. It was really clean.
Oh, yeah.
It was cheesy, but not skeevy.
It's Japanese style,
right?
Which is everything is clean except for the squat toilets.
No, my other friend asked, was there a bunch of bondage equipment? No.
Oh, no.
Not,
but I'm sure
our place was classy.
If that was your
as
thing.
As classy as fish painted on the mirrored walls can get.
Really classy is really the right word.
Right. It was not a deviant hotel.
No.
It was a chintzy hotel.
It was chintzy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tacky.
Tacky.
But I'm sure, I mean, if that was your thing, bondage, I'm sure that it would not be hard to find.
There's a Hello Kitty bondage hotel.
Yes. Yeah.
I think it's in Osaka. All right. So one reason we were staying in a love hotel in Shibuya was so we would be in Tokyo proper and we were going to try and go to the fish market super early the next morning. Because the idea is, you stay up all night, you go to the fish market, it's early in the morning before the trains start running, you get the best sushi ever. For many reasons, like we stayed out really late with Chi, then I stayed up really late trying to sing karaoke to myself in the karaoke machine. So we didn't really get to the fish market till noon. And obviously the fish trading had stopped. It also looked like it was a holiday.
It might not have been open that day.
There was like a sign that said something about a holiday.
Which?
But it wasn't a holiday that we knew of. Mickey didn't think it was a holiday.
But the sign said that the fish market was closed for a holiday. Maybe it was just a fish god holiday. Who knows?
Who knows?
But it kind of made me feel like I'm glad we didn't bust our asses to get there at 5 in the morning or 4 in the morning. Because I would have been really angry if the fish market was closed. And I got out there. And keep in mind, it was still really cold.
Yeah.
And especially out by the water. So this is like the most depressing part of the trip.
The last day. Embarrassing. Yeah, not very good.
So we got hustled. I'm convinced it was like a Yakuza sushi place.
Maybe. It was just a place that rips off foreigners. Well, because it was filled with other foreigners. The guy who got us to go in spoke English.
Because I figured
it was a hustling.
All of these sushi restaurants were going to be just as good. Because they're all right by the fish market. There's not going to be any difference. I'm sure that they're all going to be fine.
There's always a difference. The trick, always wait in line behind Japanese people. Like, look for the store or bakery or cafe with the longest line of Japanese people and go there.
I know, but I was also determined not
to
go
noodle places.
To another kaiten sushi place because we've done it now.
Well, I didn't actually see any kaiten places in the market.
Though. And
no.
Except, no, not all of them, but
I saw
many of them
maybe
were.
One that I noticed.
There's...
Anyway, there were several 24-hour sushi places.
Point is, we didn't go there, which we should have,
no,
because we got hustled by
a
guy
hosed.
Who, in English, chatted us up and sat us down in this place.
And gave us a coupon. And it was gross.
It was disgusting.
Like, the tuna was obviously the wrong color.
This was Z-grade meat.
I could barely eat it. I wouldn't if it was a gourmet food manga, what I would have done is flipped over my tray, stood up and yelled at the chefs they should be ashamed of themselves for making bad sushi in this fish market, which is like supposed to be the best in Tokyo. Anyway, they should have been ashamed of themselves. I should have ratted them out and demanded for my money back or something. Instead, I just made Noah eat the stuff that was too bad for me to eat, and that meant he got a little sick later.
I got sick, predictably, but I think it was a Yakuza place because the guys behind the counter were not real sushi chefs.
They weren't very clean cut.
Big guys with tattoos.
Maybe they're dock workers.
And, well, they might have been dock workers. I would buy that. But I'm sure all dock workers are part of the Yakuza, so... All
right.
Look, it's not that much of a stretch based on how that place operated.
Well, we moved on from there and tried to hit the last touristy place. I also miss I misunderstood some instructions from my parents. Where I asked my parents, do you want anything from Japan? And on a, you know how Gmail links all the replies to something together? My dad had replied and said something like, I think your mom wants a kimono. I thought my mom really wanted a kimono, so we
and
tried
so
really hard.
So began one of the most frustrating.
It was like a fruitless search. I looked at a bunch of websites, and the websites were like, real new kimonos are too expensive. If you want a kimono as a souvenir, go and get a used one. So there's an antiques mall in Ginza that's only closed on Wednesdays, the day that we went, the
yep.
last day of the trip before leaving.
Yep.
We went to a department store that had some
yep.
used pre-made kimonos, and the woman shooed me out of the department store. That did not go well after several stores.
Her kimonos were too small
right,
for us,
for the large American frames. Then I just broke down and bought a yukata, and I was like, Mom doesn't even know what kimonos are for. When would she even wear one anyway? Whereas yukata, you kind of wear like a robe. It's also really cheap. So I got a half cheesy yukata, and that was fine. Because Mom was like, oh, yeah, thanks. And my dad was like, yeah, I was the one who said she wanted a kimono. And I was
yeah.
like, oh, God damn it. We went to the last tourist attraction that we would go to on the trip in Asakusa, the big giant lantern thing with the Thunder Gate and whatever. It's in a bunch of anime. Again, there was the parade of chintzy tourist crap. And by now, at the end of our 20-day journey, it seemed like too much. Like, oh, gee, look, they're selling crappy keychains with a
yeah.
giant lantern on it. Oh,
although
wow.
I did get some very nice, very small frogs.
Mm, yeah, that's true. One shop had the smallest frogs ever.
I'd never seen it.
And I bought...
Small.
I don't think... I didn't buy it, though, but they had, like, Nana-themed Hello Kitty charms.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Osaka Nana. I thought I bought it, and I totally didn't.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't see it in my stuff.
Are you sure?
I didn't find it. I unpacked everything. Then we went back and hung out with Mickey one last time, and that's when we went to the aquarium bar.
Yeah.
The bar that has a giant aquarium. It's an aquarium in the bar, including a tiny manta ray swimming around. And we sat in the tables in the back, though, and each table had little fish swimming around inside, and it was pretty good. And then I felt kind of depressed because it was the end of the journey and been a really long trip, and I don't really want to leave at that point. And Mickey was like, you guys should just live here. You could teach English. I'm like, you're not helping, Mickey. Shut up. Oh. And I kind of felt bad. Like, Mickey wanted to hang out lots more than we actually had time for because I didn't want to be a burden on her, like, staying in her apartment for such a long time. So I deliberately planned it so we would go to all these other places and not have to stay with her the whole time. But she really wanted to hang out more than we actually did. So she was very much like, come back again. Just like the woman at Gonzo had been like, come back again when we're working on an
right, when we
show.
Actually have something to show you.
We're like, yeah, we're gonna
and
have to
I
come back.
Like I like Mickey a lot. She was super nice and really helpful.
She was super cool, and she was really bilingual because she
very
went to
thoughtful,
college.
And she spoke English, which
super well.
Embarrassingly is a really big plus because
I
can't learn Japanese.
I studied a lot of Japanese before I left, and immediately on arrival it became apparent. All the Japanese I knew was super obvious from context anyway.
Yeah.
They weren't where I even stopped translating after a while. The sentences I understood fully were painfully clear from the situation they were occurring in.
Aaron was able to ask questions but not understand the answers.
Yeah, that's a problem. A lot of the train signs and stuff were in English anyway. And for the most part, a lot of menus have, like, there's a picture menu or an English menu or plastic food out front, so you can always, like, point to whatever it is you want. Not a problem. I guess the only thing we really didn't talk about is that we went to 7-Eleven almost every day.
Yeah.
Because there's a 7-Eleven near Mickey's house. The
7-Eleven is very useful in
Japan.
It's
really nice. They have everything. They have a big selection of whatever manga has come out that week and all the manga magazines and anything you can think of, like fresh shirts for work. I guess if you spilled something on your work shirt,
yep.
we need a new shirt. Underwear.
iTunes cards.
Lighters. Well, I guess they always have.
Yeah, but cool Gundam lighters.
Edible food.
Edible.
Edible. New business card holders.
Yeah.
I forgot yours.
In fact, we looked all over the place because we thought you should be able to buy cell phone minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't find little cards.
So we asked.
And
she's like, here you go.
Yep.
She's like, oh, what company? I'm like, SoftBank. She's like, here you go. In Japanese.
So, well, yeah, but it's because they had a machine behind the counter, and she typed everything in, and then it spat out a phone card.
It was really easy to refill my card, too. The card instructions were in English, and my SoftBank phone was set to English menus, so
yeah,
not a problem.
We didn't mention any of the bento.
Oh, yeah, the train
maybe there'll
bento.
Be an omake show that's just about what
food.
We ate.
Yeah.
There was a lot of delicious stuff.
All right, that's it. Then we flew back. Don't fly northwest to Japan. They call it northwest.
Northwest,
fine for domestic flights, no good for international flights.
Yeah.
Yeah, not cool.
It was bad. And then we returned to New York.
Well, we returned to Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
We saw my parents for another couple of days, dropped off some souvenirs.
Totally.
And everything had been hit by a horrible ice storm in the
area
where I live. So
how could I forget that?
No, I had never seen an ice storm.
Dudes.
Dudes.
If you have never seen
like
a true ice storm, you have got to see this before you die.
I didn't load my pictures up.
Where every single blade of grass and stick and twig is completely encased in ice. And when the wind blows, you can hear it tinkle.
Yeah.
Like wind chimes.
And when the sun shines, it makes little prism rainbow things.
Wow.
But normally they happen in March when the weather in Michigan is just on the verge of turning warm. Like, you know, it's 32 degrees and then it's raining and then the rain freezes because the temperature drops at nightfall. In this case, the ice storm had happened in January. So although there had been a warm January up to that point, then it was apparently icy rain. And then the temperatures dropped to normal January type temperatures. So although in a normal ice storm, the ice usually melts halfway through the next day or at max the day after that. This ice storm...
Yeah, we were there for a few days.
The ice had been around all week.
And it didn't go anywhere.
No, because it was too cold for it to actually melt.
It was
it
really great.
It caused major power
outages.
If you
can imagine, it looks like...
My parents had been without power for like 4 days. I'm glad they had power when we got back.
That cheesy special effect when people get frozen.
Yeah.
You know, when the wizard casts Cone of Cold or whatever.
Yeah, like that.
And they're encased in ice.
Cone of Cold.
It looked just like that.
Yeah.
But for real.
And it stayed that way.
Yeah.
But it had caused severe problems. Branches fell on power lines in the whole area. They brought in work crews from 3 states away to try and help people out.
Trees were splitting in all kinds of crazy directions.
All the trees were weighted down.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. Now this most recent snowstorm, the one that dropped like 12 feet on upstate New York,
mm-hmm.
It hit my parents too. They got like 3 feet of snow.
Oh, man.
We only got like 2 inches. All right, let's wrap this up. Any final closing thoughts about our practical trip to Japan?
Yes. When I got back to New York, I was finally able to play Dungeons & Dragons again after a 5-week absence that nearly killed me.
I was able to order food in English.
Yeah.
And it was a relief. Also, the anime, we watched an episode of Nana while we were there that had like a cliffhanger thing, and I didn't really understand enough Japanese, but it sounded like they were saying that Nana had died, and I was like, what? So
she'd killed herself.
I know. So we're working our way through the fan subs as they come out to try and catch up to what was on when we were in Japan. And also, Hanayori Dango Season 2. The first episode was on when I was in Hokkaido.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's all on the internet.
They were filming at Sarah Lawrence College, which was really weird.
Oh, they filmed outside of Naomi's workplace, too. She linked to it, and she was like, this alleyway?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In Chinatown, like, they totally shot a giant scene.
But it was weird because we were watching it on TV, and I was like, wait, I've been there.
Yeah.
That couldn't be Columbia. No, wait. My sister went to Sarah Lawrence.
Right. So Honey, you're Dango live action Season 2.
That's it.
The end.
The end. Japan's really great. Maybe not Tokyo so much.
Osaka
gets 2
Thumbs
ninja
up.
Consultant.
Badges of approval.
Shuriken, throwing stars up, whatever.
All right, we're done.
女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様女神様